You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And welcome here. Happy Friday. Welcome to another edition of Husker Online Headlines. Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple here as we bring you through what we feel are the five biggest headlines of the week. Before I get to that, make sure on HuskerOnline.com, we've got a great promo that's going to run for the next week. You can get 3 months of Husker Online for $1 or commit to a whole year for a special price of $49. That's half off. So get on HuskerOnline.com. We've got a great special that's running here this week of June with so much going on. And Steve Sipple, that takes me to the first headline as Nebraska's busy June begins. The visit weekend for the Huskers starts with 9 official visitors coming in this weekend. I think there's a few common themes when you start to look at this recruiting class and this opening weekend. Number one, the state of Texas. There's a number of high-profile players from the state of Texas.
Five make
their way. So 5 of the 9 from Texas. But then the second trend is defensive backs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and some couple highly rated ones. But the Texas element is big. And that Texas element will continue, too, obviously. I mean, this staff is – decided to emphasize the state of Texas. June 23, I think, on according to our visit list, 16 guys right now, 6 are from Texas. This is going to continue to be a theme. And you know, the guys that, I'll tell you what, one thing you'll notice on here, Sean, is the guys that they've targeted. Texas Tech is going to be a school that Nebraska goes head to head with.
And guess who the connection there is? Joey McGuire, who took his first collegiate job under Matt Rhule at Baylor. So they have a very similar evaluation system that looks at a lot of the same metrics, driven in a lot of times by speed numbers, track numbers.
Okay.
You know, you could go back to Jalen Lloyd. His other offer was Texas Tech.
Oh, interesting.
So there's a crossover there with Texas Tech and Nebraska. I want to even say Eric Fields had Texas Tech on him as well.
I think so. Now you look at that. Like, look at Peyton Morgan. Texas Tech is on him. Carlon Jones, the Bay City, Texas defensive lineman. Texas Tech is on his list. Dante Carter, the safety from Cibolo, Texas. Texas Tech. So you're going to – I think, you'll probably continue to see that. But, yeah, you're trying to go in and steal some guys. And frankly, they're going to try to make a living doing it. And this is going to be interesting right off the top to see, you know, if you can go get a Peyton Morgan, get him away from Texas Tech, and pull him up here to our neck of the woods. This staff, and, you know, Matt Rhule in particular, he made a living down there at Baylor Now, Baylor's in the state, though. It's a little different. Dynamics obviously are different now.
Yeah, you've seen, you know, last year Nebraska took a record haul of players from Texas. I believe with Joshua Fleeks included, it was 7 players from the state of Texas came to Nebraska in the recruiting class. They've already gotten 3 for this upcoming year.
Right.
And, you know, and I even throw like Oklahoma in there. That's kind of in the region. Eric Fields is from the Ardmore, Oklahoma area. But that is a hotbed for the staff, and I think that really is apparent by who they're bringing in this opening weekend. And it's important when you start to size up recruiting in the month of June.
Okay.
The biggest thing to know is official visits are gold. They're not just given out to people. You get 56 official visits by rule per year per school. So if you're being brought in on this opening weekend of June, you're a priority. If you have official visits set up with any other Power 5 school, generally you're a priority, but a lot of times the deeper in the month you are with that official, you might be a plan B guy. Mm-hmm. And they could cancel that visit on you. You know, but for Nebraska,
the school could. Or the school could too.
June 23rd, mm-hmm. it's both ways because, a kid might have you as a plan B too.
Right.
But June 23rd is Nebraska's most, that's their biggest weekend. They're banking on that as like their big weekend, which is the last weekend. So there's a lot of interesting strategy by Matt Rhule and the staff with how they're going to backload June on the final weekend going into the dead period. But a lot of these kids get pressure put on them. I look at those Bellevue West kids, Davon Hall, Isaiah McMorris. They're scheduled to come to Nebraska the 23rd. McMorris, no other official visits set yet. Hall is not on an official to Tennessee this weekend. He's going to do a camp there to try to get an offer.
Yeah.
But both these young men, I think, are trying to bet on themselves a little bit, trying to drum up more committable opportunities. We know McMorris likes USC. We know McMorris has talked to Oklahoma, but Oklahoma's got kind of their receiver board in check right now. So it's stressful. I mean, I think
stressful for
the kids.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of prospects don't realize. Do you have a committable offer? And usually the June official visits are what tell you kind of where you stand with the team.
Yeah. I mean, you really watch Davon Hall and Isaiah McMorris. You watch those situations. Daniel Kalen's in the class, of 2024, verbally committed. God, you'd think with Kalen in place that he could get one of those teammates to go with him, right?
Yeah, I would say McMorris is the more likely of the two.
Yeah, I've read that. I've read that you've said that.
I just think it doesn't have a good feel with Hall. We'll see how it goes out of Tennessee. I mean, I almost get the sense if Tennessee were to offer him, which I think is a big if, because their situation there. You know, I think about the receiver position in general. There are 67 four-star better receivers in the class of 2024. That's a standard number, by the way. That's not some that is a deep position every year. Mm-hmm. Just because you're a high three or even a four-star, mm-hmm. it doesn't necessarily mean you have committable situations at all the offers you have. You might have an offer. It doesn't mean you can commit to the offer.
Yeah, Davon Hall, does he have his eye on the SEC?
I'd say Arkansas, A&M,
right.
Tennessee. Yeah. Those are all teams but think about A&M. If they have 2 to 3 receiver spots, that board's going to be competitive. Ole Miss is going to be competitive. Arkansas.
Yeah. But look at where he's looking and looking at where McMorris is looking. Jay Norvell, a friend of yours, the former Nebraska
friend
offensive coordinator. Yeah, mine too, yeah. Former offensive coordinator here at Nebraska. He once told me that, and this was off the record, but I guess
take it on the record now.
All these years later, you know, maybe it doesn't matter. He said it's hard to pull wide receivers into cold weather. It happens, obviously.
Michigan, Ohio State do whatever.
Well, Ohio State's not really cold, but they play in a cold weather conference. Michigan, not as much, Sean. They're not loaded at receiver. They're not. I mean, I had to do their preview, and it's not like Ohio State.
Who was your geography teacher to tell you that Ohio is not a cold state?
Well. No. Well, you're right. I mean,
we learned a little bit more in South Omaha about geography here.
But anyway, it's a harder pull to get those guys to cold. A lot of those guys are prima donnas that want to play in warm weather. That's what it comes down to.
And then the rebuttal.
And I don't even Sean, I'm sorry. I shouldn't even say prima donnas. They just want to play in warm weather, a lot of them.
And what's interesting though, it really doesn't get that cold anymore.
I mean, not really.
Like once out of 5 years, like this year, Wisconsin game was cold, but it had been relatively mild in November's.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like April's have gotten colder here, but the flip side, the falls have gotten a little warmer. Like September's a hot month in Nebraska now.
Yeah. So this is it. It started up. I mean, today's June 2nd. The kids are on campus right now. I mean, Peyton Morgan and
nine visitors.
Yeah. Mario Buford and Carlon Jones and these guys, they're here.
Hi, it's Sean Callahan with Husker Online. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for 5. That's right. A company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones and see what we find. Learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus. All right, headline number 2. Camp season is also here. And for Nebraska. They've got a very, very busy camp schedule that will open up on Sunday. So Nebraska will run an individual camp in Lincoln on Sunday. Then the coaches will get on a plane and head to Belton, Texas, which is near Waco, for the Mary Harden Baylor Mega Camp. There's two sessions. Nebraska will be there for that. And then they're also on that same day, we'll have a coach in Naperville at North Central College for a Chicago area satellite camp. My guess is EJ Barthel will be there. That's his area, Chicago. And you can only take your full-time coaches to these camps to work. And then on Tuesday, they'll be at Houston Christian for a satellite camp at C.E. King High School. And then there's also a satellite camp on Thursday in Pennsylvania. They're going to work. We've been able to pinpoint 9 days in June Nebraska will work camps. You get 10. So there's probably another satellite camp we don't have pinned down yet. But I'm sure Matt Rhule's using all 10 of his allotted camp days. And, you know, on those camp days, you can work camps in multiple locations. This counts as one of your days. So you see that with Belton, Texas, Naperville, Illinois. They'll have coaches at both events. That still only counts for one camp day. But the key piece, Sip, is Matt Rhule will be in Belton, Texas, and Houston, Texas for the two satellite camps.
And what, Sean, I'll interview you. That's how we'll do this a little bit. What are they trying, what is Matt Rhule trying to get out of those satellite camps in Texas?
You know, it's not about 2024.
Okay.
I mean, it can be. Like, don't get me wrong, if somebody shows up that you didn't know about, but generally you're looking at 25s, 26s, maybe even a 27 kid that shows up. But you want to look at young players, get eyes on them, watch them, time them, work them out, then get them up to Lincoln for a game.
Okay.
So you look at the schedule. Northern Illinois game this year is at a night game in Lincoln.
6 p.m., yeah.
So, hey, we got these great flights at the Lincoln Airport. We can get you up to Lincoln from Houston or Dallas or Austin now. Flying up to Lincoln.
So they're going down there to lay some groundwork.
And establish a presence. And let's be honest, Nebraska's presence in the state of Texas since they've joined the Big Ten has been minimal at best. Now there's a really strong effort with Bob Wager, Garrett McGuire, Matt Rhule, Evan Cooper. I mean, they've got coaches on the staff that understand Texas. You have Dr. Susan Elza in her role as the chief of staff with all of her coaching contacts that she knows around the state. So this is, to me, more about developing an infrastructure. You don't take the head coach out of the office or out of Lincoln for a satellite camps like this just for no reason. There's a clear strategy involved to take the entire staff. We haven't seen a head coach at Nebraska go on the road to a satellite camp since the summer of 2017.
Since
Mike Riley went out on the road in the summer of 2017. And it was more common practice. The Adidas tour back then, I covered all those camps, and you would see Dave Doreen from North Carolina State.
Okay.
What was the Mississippi State's coach that went to Florida?
Sean.
Dan Mullen. You'd spend
analyst Dan Mullen.
The Kansas staff, David Beatty. Any Adidas school was invited to come. You know, Lane Kiffin would be out there.
Yeah.
All the Adidas schools would kind of travel to each one of these events together, and it was a lot of fun. We went and covered it at length. The model has changed a little bit with satellite camps. A lot of now because of the transfer portal and June official visits. Back when that was happening, you weren't having official visits in June.
You weren't.
I mean, they're squeezing so much into June now.
Man, they are. These guys are busy. So the question I have, another question I have for you is Rhule and his staff going down there, do they know who's coming? Do they have an idea that there's going to be some major league prospects there?
Yeah, they will. I mean, they'll invite kids to be there. Like, hey, we want to offer your freshman or your sophomore, but needs to come to Belton.
We want to see him.
He needs to come to Houston.
We want to see him.
Well, you don't even have to come to camp in Lincoln. We'll come to you. Just come work out for us.
And if the kid doesn't want to, that's a red flag. Can be. No,
well,
it can be.
You just won't get an offer.
Right.
And if you duck a camp or duck a stopwatch, usually it's a red flag.
Right. That's absolutely.
And it will be interesting to see just, you know, what comes out. There used to be too, like, you'd invite guys to the camp that may have already had offers and they wouldn't camp. And so you'd go to these satellite camps and there would be like a camp within the camp where high-profile four-star guys and their handlers would show up to the camp in Miami or Georgia or wherever it was at, and the coaches would go spend time talking to these kids that were there to visit with them, mm-hmm. but they didn't do the camp.
Okay.
Because they didn't need to do the camp.
Yeah.
You get to a point as a recruit, you don't have to camp.
Yeah, but in some ways you got to prove yourself before you get to that point. And coaches are watching. I mean, they're watching for guys who get to the front of the line, you know, that want to be involved in a drill, that don't hang back. They're watching for things like that. They're watching who's matched up against who and who wants those prime matchups and who shies away from them. So it's a proving ground. And you know, let's face it, this is recruiting. I mean, they're trying to size up guys who love this competition and against guys who shy away from it. So I think it's really important.
And these days they're a lot of work for Nebraska. I mean, they just the commitment and time, and you're out in the heat, yeah. you know, all day in Texas.
Oh, I've had coaches tell me it's hell.
It's a long
day now.
Like one of my toughest work days of the year used to be in Miami when we'd work an FAU camp in the morning, then have to go figure out somewhere to write
right.
in between the camp.
Oh, God.
And then we'd come back and we'd go work the Florida International camp with mm-hmm. Butch Davis at FIU, and that would run till 9 o'clock at night. Yeah. And then we'd have to go back and write off
Tell
that.
Midnight.
And then get on a plane the next morning.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I mean, it was a beast.
And yeah, I want to talk about
the coach, they would be like, why don't you guys come out and have some drinks with us and sell it? I'm like, we got work to do,
yeah,
coach.
Yeah.
And that's like when you go to these things, not only do you cover the camp for us, mm-hmm. you know, you have to go back and write and break it all down for the Husker fans.
Right. I mean, you just don't go and watch it.
It's a lot of fun, though. I mean, I've always enjoyed getting out to the grassroots of it all. And, you know, getting in those environments. I have a lot of great memories covering satellite camps over the years.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, headline number three, Steve Sipple.
Yes.
President Ted Carter mm-hmm. Is set to move into a new role where he'll represent Nebraska on the Council of Chancellor and Presidents in the Big Ten Conference. Trev Alberts now will report directly to him and not the new chancellor, Rodney Bennett, correct? That's our new chancellor?
Right. Rodney Bennett from
Southern Miss.
From Southern Miss. Now, Sean, this isn't done.
It's starting the process to get it done.
Right. You know, on June 21 is the date I think the regents would vote on it. But also, the Big Ten has to approve it. And I wouldn't refer to it as a slam dunk. The Big Ten bylaws have to match the University of Nebraska's situation. We'll just say situation, for lack of a better word. And I guess the best way to put it right now is the lawyers are looking at it. This is not a small move, and it's not a matter of just Ted Carter filling Nebraska's chair on the Council of Presidents and Chancellors. It's much more than that. As you mentioned, Trev would answer to Ted Carter. That's part of it. So, in effect, Ted Carter would oversee policy decisions, and he'd just oversee the athletic department in general. It's a huge, huge change. It's a massive change. It's never been done in Nebraska that I know of, not in recent years. It's always been the chancellor that the AD answered to. So, but Ted, now people are going to say, why? Why are they doing this? Well, I did sit down with Ted for 45 minutes this week, and after a meeting like that with Ted, you fully understand why this makes sense, in that his understanding of sports is enormous. He was a Naval Academy soccer player. He was a superintendent of the Navy and got sports really rolling at Navy as the superintendent, not as an AD. He could be an AD. He knows that, Sean. He knows enough about the athletic arena where if he wanted to take a demotion, he could be a great AD. He understands the issues at an extremely high level.
He played a critical role to get Matt Rhule here.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, I wouldn't say. I mean, no, I'm not trying to knock Ronnie Green, but I would say that Ted Carter was much more involved than Ronnie Green was in that process.
There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, almost dropped 100%.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta go to no doubt. I'll just go to no doubt.
We have a drinking game, by the way. And last show, one guy said, "I'm on my ass drunk after Sipple's 100%."
So yeah, I mean, Ted knows, for instance, knows Bill Belichick very well, and Belichick, I would say, was sort of integral in this hire of Rhule. I mean, he said to Ted, I mean, this is a guy you should look at, Matt Rhule. So yeah, it's Ted Carter. It really was a fascinating discussion. But my biggest takeaway is that he understands the issues, both national and Nebraska-centric, at a high level. So Nebraska-centric, he understands what the Go Big project and the renovation of Memorial Stadium. I mean, he said there's two things that I asked him about. What are the biggest challenges with that stadium renovation that will be coming? There'll be announcements coming. He said the fan experience has to be the number one thing. It can no longer be, we just got to find a way to cram 90,000 people in there. It's got to be comfort. That has to be the number one thing. And also he mentioned something I'd never heard. And he said, we have to be very mindful of security, that we've never had problems really, and we don't want to have problems. So it's not just in the stadium. He says in and around the stadium, it has to continue to be a safe environment. Those are the things on his mind.
One of the interesting things I've always thought about security at Memorial Stadium is the stadium reentry process.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not another stadium in the world where you can like leave and come back in other than Memorial Stadium.
Yeah.
And some of that is because I think they know if they took the ability for a fan at halftime to go out and tailgate and then come back in, they might lose ticket holders.
Yeah, but yeah, here it happens.
I mean, you could leave. You have up till the fourth quarter, so you can miss the whole third quarter and then just come back in with your ticket stub.
Right, and he kind of made not to that, but when he talks about security, he just doesn't mean in the bowl or in the bowl and then in the corridors. He means all around the stadium, in the neighborhood, the Russian Bottoms, the whole thing. It's interesting to talk to him about that. The other thing he said that I thought was somewhat informative to Nebraska fans. You know, they have real budget challenges at the university level, but he says, I will never cut an athletic program. He says athletics is too important to the culture, to the personality, to the feel of a campus. And I mean, he witnessed it at Navy. And he's very mindful of the fact that they've struggled in the men's Big Three. He says that he's optimistic about those sports, but it's got to change. And the other thing is, it almost goes without saying, but it's almost, wait, you know, they have enrollment challenges. Sean, you know one way to never have enrollment challenges is for your football team to win big. They have no enrollment challenges at Alabama, I promise you. They have no enrollment challenges at Clemson, I promise you. But Nebraska has some challenges, but if they get back to winning big in football, they will not have challenges that way.
Yeah, the enrollment at Nebraska has dipped a little bit,
right?
You know, post COVID especially. And, you know, there was a time when they long strived to get it up to 30,000, and now it's below 25,000. Mm-hmm. I believe last September it was just under 24. I think the enrollment for undergrads was 23,805 last year.
So, yeah, I mean, this is all, I mean, as far as Ted Carter, taking on this role of overseeing Husker Athletics, yes, it makes sense. It is, Sean, very important that he – I think it's important for Nebraska that he has that – he has that position because he's influential, and he would be really influential on that Big Ten Council of Chancellors and Presidents. Because Sean, a lot of those people have little to no athletic background. You know what? I'm gonna tell you something. And Ted knows this. He would be very influential with Tony Petitti, the new commissioner. In fact, Petitti, I'm sure, wants Ted on that board. That he wants this to happen at Nebraska. Because Ted can be very helpful at the national level.
Yeah, it's rare at the academic level that you have kind of a dude factor.
They don't.
It just doesn't cross.
A lot of them never run a mile in their lives. That's just the fact.
And you got a former Navy admiral that was a Top Gun pilot.
A Top Gun pilot who threw 125 combat missions and played for the hockey team.
That, my friend, is a dude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. and he could be very influential for Nebraska. It could very much work in Nebraska's favor. Now, the issue is, Sean, the Big Ten, the other schools know that. So it gets political. It gets a little political. And that's why I kind of caution you against just saying this is going to happen.
Well, I look at
– see if the Big Ten lets it happen.
And Rodney Bennett, his credentials aren't, you know, he's never been a Power Five.
He's at Southern Miss. He's coming from another world. Now, that doesn't mean he doesn't understand athletics. And he will be involved. Rodney Bennett will be involved. He just, you know, Trev won't report to the chancellor if this all shakes out like they want.
And you almost feel like Trev wants it this way, too.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely he does. I mean, he has profound respect for Ted. Not that he doesn't have respect for Rodney Bennett, but he doesn't know him. I mean, he has a good working relationship with Ted. By the way, the other thing I wrote in Tunnel Talk, Ted had a great relationship with Frost. I would say that at the end of the line, the relationship was Frost and Ted, not Frost and Trev. It was Ted. Frost leaned on Ted. As a mentor. So, yeah, Ted was heavily involved. I'm not saying that Ted Carter thought that Frost should, you know, continue as the head coach. No, the writing was on the wall. It spun out of control. It wasn't really a decision that had to be made. Frost made it on his own, essentially, right? That's the way I've looked at it. It got so bad that it just became so apparent. But throughout it all, Ted was a mentor to Scott.
All right, let's move on. Headline number 4, Keisei Tominaga is coming back to Nebraska. And I don't think that this comes as a surprise that he's coming back.
No, yeah, not at all.
But it's big for Fred. I mean, I just think it's big for ticket sales. It's big for everything around next year's season because they have a star. They have an all-Big Ten level player returning. And I know Keisei was not recognized as all-Big Ten, but over the final 15, 20 games of the year, mm-hmm. he was playing at an all Big Ten
level. Well, he averaged 14 points a game in Big Ten play. Okay. That's good.
And that's counting the beginning of the year when he wasn't playing? Are you talking about just the back end of the year?
I'm just going to say he averaged 14 in the Big Ten. So all across the board. You could double check it, but that's the way Robin wrote it. He averaged 14 in the Big Ten. That's saying something. And what I said it on headline or the other day on our radio show, but he shot 51%, okay? He shot 51% from the field. That's a guy that's taken, you know, 27-footers, 23, 24, 25-foot shots routinely. Now, he's done a better job, and a lot of this stuff we covered a lot, but he's done a lot better job getting to the basket. I'd hesitate to say this is big news, though, because I don't think anybody expected him to go to the NBA, Sean. He had one workout.
I think his real value still will be overseas someday.
I think so. I mean, he's going to have to – I don't know. The one thing I don't do, and I won't do it, is trample on a young man's dreams. And he wants to play in the NBA. I don't think Keisei is a guy you want to count out. You know, right now, probably not realistic. But next season, if he continues to play at a super high level with a lot of the defense's focus on him and can prove that he can withstand the rigors of the Big Ten for a full season, then, you know, conversation is a little different, I think. He does have to definitely get stronger. He has to become a better defender. You don't see many players in the Big Ten that have a body like Tominaga. I watch the NBA a lot. You just don't see it. You don't see guys that are 6'2". Not very often.
The way he moves, though, like, he would just be tough to guard in that sense because he moves.
He is tough to guard.
When he doesn't have the ball.
He's moving all the time.
Like, it would wear
he's
you
a pain.
Down.
Oh, he's a pain. He's a pain to defend.
Like that Michigan State guy basically was yelling at him. And
didn't yell
game.
At him. Just told him to shut that you-know-what up. I mean, just said it. And listen, the Big Ten's going to be rough on Casey. It got rough for him.
He'll take some hard fouls next year.
He was already taking them. I watched those games. It got rough. They were rough on him. A lot of forearm shivers. When he's moving across the lane, guys are going to body him.
And coaches will say that. Just knock the crap out of him.
100%.
Boom! We got one.
And they're going to also say, now look at his celebrations. Are you going to let that happen?
I mean, your coach in high school would say, like our coach would say, get in there and knock the, you know what,
yeah,
out of him.
Yeah.
Get in there and knock him back. Put him back. I mean, that's how the game's played. It's physical.
For sure.
Just say it. Just be you.
100. The other part of it is, and again, sometimes we repeat ourselves in May or June, but Fred, I've been harsh on Fred. I know that. His winning percentage dictates that I be hard on him. But I think he helped Casey a lot, and I don't think it's getting talked about enough. He helped him a lot by recruiting good offensive players out of the transfer portal. Getting that Bradley guy, getting the guy from Charlotte, adding them to Jamarcus Lawrence. All that takes pressure off Casey. And I don't know if Fred would verbalize it that way or not. It wouldn't surprise me if he did, though, that, yeah, a lot of our objective was to create this team on offense where we have other shooters that we can go to shooters that we don't have to, A, rely on Casey, and B, this takes a lot of the defensive pressure off Casey, the pressure from the opponent. So I haven't heard Fred say it, but I got to think he's had that in mind. But by getting Rink masked, and it's Bryce Williams from Charlotte. It's been interesting to watch unfold.
And Casey will not be going on the overseas trip. They're going to Spain, right?
Yeah, I think so.
He'll be with the Japanese national team. And the volleyball team's in Brazil right now, by the way. It'd be a great experience as a student to get to go on those trips.
Oh, man. You're well taken care of, you know.
All right, final headline of the show, and this is my hot button topic.
Boy, this is your hot button.
But the SEC has decided to stay at 8 conference games, obviously not only for 2023, but at least 2024. The thought is they will go eventually to 9, but it fell short in the vote. I believe it only got 5 votes. It was outvoted 9-5, according to multiple reports at the SEC meetings in Destin, Florida this past week. So in 2024, Steve, we'll be in a 12-team playoff. The SEC will have 16 teams with no divisions.
Thank you for saying that.
And they will only play 8 conference games with the 2 highest-ranked teams playing for the championship.
The 2 highest-ranked teams. And the way they're going to do with the schedule is 1 permanent opponent. And 7 rotating.
And I think that was the sticking point. They couldn't agree upon
a formula.
And like Alabama was salty that their opponents were all going to be hard. It was going to be Tennessee, Auburn, and I believe LSU.
Well, again, 1 permanent opponent, 7 rotating opponents, Sean. 1 permanent opponent. That's what they've settled on. So now, what you wonder about is rivalries. I mean, so Georgia-Florida will happen, but Georgia-Auburn won't. Texas A&M maybe won't.
See, like I look at it as like Arkansas, Missouri, Texas A&M, Like, those teams should all be playing each other. And Oklahoma. Those five teams, four of their, when they go to nine, they should all be playing, but they won't, but that just makes sense.
When they go to nine, they're not. They're not. They haven't yet. Now, you're right. Greg Sankey, there was a lot of thought going into the meetings that it was going to become nine because the commissioner wanted it to be nine. Something changed along the way, and Sankey backed off.
The money, too. I think that the fact that ESPN, which they won't give any more money to the SEC for adding that game in 2024.
Adding that game.
The ninth game.
Right.
That, so, yeah. I mean, you think about the inventory that adds.
Right. The schools would want, obviously, that would be good for the schools. But it's not happening yet. And I'm glad the no division thing, Sean, which is going to happen in the Big Ten too. I think these are massive changes in college football. Massive. You're doing away with divisions in these conferences. There's sort of some elements to it that they're obvious, but we don't speak to them. Like, I'll give you an example. Okay, no divisions. Texas A&M, for instance, picked fifth in the SEC West by Lindy's. Now, Texas A&M, what if they finish fourth in the SEC West? Doesn't sound so bad. But what if fourth in the SEC West gets you 13th in the conference or 12th in the conference? Doesn't look good. It's going to be tough for, like, and Nebraska's in that conversation right now. I mean, Nebraska, maybe they get good and they win 7 or 8, but they're still 12th, in a big conference, 10th. It's pretty far down the list.
I think we both agree this Big Ten is going to be bigger than 16 teams.
Well,
over time.
I mean, what's going to look like? What's it going to look like if you're in the 13 to 8, 9 range? You're ninth place. I mean, that's one part of this that's really interesting to me. And it's the other thing that's interesting to me is all this is happening. These are massive changes. No division. Nebraska's not going to be in division in 2024. So that whole conversation about, just win your division first and worry about the conference later totally goes away, right? And it's going to go away in the SEC.
Yeah, and
massive.
Just the way the realignment's going to shake out too, like Colorado, is talking to the Big 12.
Yeah, it's going to happen, Sean.
I think it's going to happen.
Sean, it's going
to
happen.
What's funny is how long the Pac-12 is taking to like release their media rights deal. Because it's so bad, it's almost going to be embarrassingly bad.
Yeah.
And the minute they announce this deal, everyone's out the door.
Right. I mean, Barry Trammell at the Daily Oklahoma has basically reported that Colorado's
going
to the Big 12. If Colorado goes,
Utah's going to go.
Right. I mean, then you'd probably get Colorado, Utah, Arizona. Now, Sean, hold on. You'd probably get Colorado, Utah, Arizona, Arizona State that go to the Big 12. And then what becomes of the Pac-12? Sean, it's done.
It's
over. And then think about that. Think about college football without the Pac-12. I mean, that's not the college football any of us grew up watching. Nothing, these are all things that are happening seemingly kind of quickly, and they're all massive changes, seismic. And I don't know how it's all going to shake out. And again, it goes back to Ted Carter, putting Ted Carter in this position where it's all this stuff is happening, and it all has an impact on – there's residual impacts on everybody.
And you think about some other teams, though, like obviously Oregon and Washington to the Big Ten makes sense.
I guess, yeah.
Arizona and now Arizona State, they're both thinking bigger now. ASU just got accepted into the AAU.
Okay, so maybe they would think about the Big Ten.
And I can tell you that Arizona, is holding out hopes for a Big Ten conversation. I mean, I think Arizona knows the Big 12's there if they want it.
Well, what they have is basketball. Arizona, the Big Ten, I would think, would like that basketball brand.
Yeah, and it's, then Notre Dame, as you know, has just got – what's surprising that they weren't in the AAU before, but Notre Dame is in the AAU now. Mm-hmm. Nebraska, by the way, is the only team in the Big Ten not in the AAU. They were, and then they were kicked out of the AAU after they joined the Big Ten. Miami as well just got accredited to the AAU. And we were talking about Big Ten, that, these presidents, that's something they like.
All this is very odd. I mean, talking about Miami to the Big Ten is a strange concept to me, but it could happen.
But it could. Do you think the SEC wants Miami?
Well, I imagine. I don't know how all that's going to.
Yeah, but what about the powers of that league? Does University of Florida and the teams that were, they may not want Miami in that league.
Yeah. I think we're going to get to a point where there's not much splitting hairs over that type of stuff, where it's just, okay, yeah, let them in. We got to have a coalition here of power, and it doesn't. So 48 some of that,
teams.
Yeah, some of that stuff you just. Some of those traditional conversations that we've had over the years kind of go by the wayside, I think.
It's really going to become like a, you know, I hate that people talk all the time, but like the SEC and the Big Ten are going to be like the AFC and the NFC.
We'll see on that. I mean, it looks like it.
That's how it feels. There's so many politics, though, involved because the universities and the state governments and alumni and state legislatures, I mean, boards of regents, there's a lot of layers to these things.
There are.
It's not just like, let's go play football in the Big Ten.
No, there's not. But what you're referring to is, see, we always have talked about, we've talked about realignment and expansion. Well, there's going to be a point where there's contraction, where, you know what I mean, where there's some haves. Well, the way Ted puts it is there's haves, there's want-to-be haves, and there's have-nots. You don't want to be on the other two. You don't want to be on the lower two. Nebraska's a half.
Because of the fan base.
Exactly.
Without
it's not
the
because
fan,
of winning anymore.
No. Without the fan base, where is Nebraska? That's a whole other scary conversation.
Money and fan base, and those two things largely go together, are what Nebraska has. But, you know, there's as a leader like, Ted Carter, Trev Alberts, they have to, you know, one of the reasons they always say we have to take care of the fans is because of what we're saying. If Nebraska, so what would happen? So I asked Ted, how would Nebraska ever become a have-not? He said, I don't envision that happening. But if it were to happen, it would be because of sustained losing and fan interest dwindling. And that would be about the only thing that could happen, which he wasn't being an alarmist. I asked him the question, and that's what he said.
And that's why the stadium refresh is so important.
Oh, yeah, you take care of the fans.
I mean, you cannot roll the dice with the fan amenities. Like, they have to have better access to South Stadium. There's no bathrooms in South Stadium.
One thing I regret from this conversation with Ted is he said the words, we can't worry anymore about cramming 90,000 people into the stadium. A natural follow-up question would have been, so what do you envision? What do you envision capacity going down to? I didn't ask the question.
Well, first of all, it hasn't been 90,000 for a while. They've already started to. Remember when Nebraska played Miami in Bo's final year?
Yeah, it was raucous.
92,000. That was the record for the stadium. And then they've slowly, over these 10 years,
got it about 85.
Added widened seats, removed aisles, added railings. I mean, they've done things to bring it down because the seating demand wasn't there.
All right. So So I wonder, Ted might not even have gave me a number, but I just don't think they're going to worry.
I'd say 75.
Whoa. You think they get it down to 75?
Well, it's at 86 right now.
Yeah.
So I think upper 70s is probably.
Okay. Be great. I think that'd be the way to go.
Look at what they did to the.
I do think that'd be
east balcony. Mm-hmm. They had to remove like 20% of the seats to go chair back and have more legroom space. So I think that's a pretty good snapshot of what it's going to probably be for the whole stadium eventually. That if they add a chair back or bench seating with chair backs to it, widen things. It probably will eliminate around 20% of seats.
Okay, now this is you always got to think about what we're saying. Okay, so you put that down to 75, or say they tried 72. What if Nebraska got going again, where they're winning 11, winning 12? Okay, now they're in the college football playoff, and they look like they could maybe win it. Now, ticket demand, then you'd get to maybe a place where we have a lot of people that can't get in the stadium that want to.
It was 72,000, though, Steve, over the national title eras. It didn't go to 78 until 99 when they added And then in 2006, it went to 86.
Well, it'd be,
and then in 2013, it went to 92. And now we're back to 86.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If they reduce capacity by what you're suggesting, and then they start winning 12 games, that'd be a great problem to have.
Because it was 72 for the better all the national title. And then they added the sky boxes on the West, and that brought it to 78. How I know all this, don't ask me. But
yeah, because you're a freak. 100. And they I just want their I'd love to see that issue. I just want that problem to happen.
All right. Well, with that, hope everybody has a great weekend. We thanks again for joining us here for Husker Online Headlines. Got our producer, Trey Yannity, stepping in for Megan. Did a great job on the back end. If you're not a subscriber, check us out, huskeronline.com. We've got a great special running this week. 3 months of access for $1, or you can get an annual subscription right now as a new subscriber for half off at $49.95. That is the best deal you're going to get right now at On3 Sports. Check that out at On3 at HuskerOnline.com. Also like, follow, subscribe to us right here on the Husker Online YouTube page. Make sure you hit that like button right in the corner there on the bottom of the page. For Steve Sipple, right, I'm now Sean Callahan, signing off for Husker Online Headlines.